What's good? My name's Nuria.
And my name is Caroline. This is the Cathartic Experience.
Two therapists talking about life
in an unfiltered way.
So for today's episode, we will be talking about code switching. So how have you been this week?
I've been doing good. This week, it's been a lot about just jumping in really into new projects. Mm. I've noticed I'm at my second coffee for today.
And it is 1 p.m.
Yes. How are you?
I think just about the same. Things have been very busy and there's a lot to manage, but yes. I'm really engaged in the work that I do. So I find it really fun. But of course, we all have our limits as people. But I do think this is a really, really good topic because it's so relevant, especially for us as Black women. So I think the inspiration for it came from understanding that we are in predominantly white spaces. The Ottawa is quite multicultural, but the environments that we find ourselves in are quite white. Yeah. So I think this is such an important conversation to be having.
It is. It really is. And so which one do you want to do first?
I think, but before we dive into any of our experiences with code switching, I think another inspiration for this was also kind of the true self versus the false self. Right. I think this is something that I was so prone to doing growing up in my own family because my parents have, you know, ideals and expectations about who you are, what you do, how you spend your time. And you can't always tell your parents everything.
Right. I feel like I'm still doing it, actually.
Like hiding certain aspects of yourself. Because they don't always handle it in the best way. Sometimes it comes with like a judgment and then you feel ashamed. So from very early on, I learned how to hide certain aspects of myself because I didn't want other people reacting to it. So I've always had this a little bit of a persona. You don't always give everybody everything. Yes,
especially when it comes to family. Like you would think that your family would blindly accept you and take you in, but it's like that's not always the case.
It is not always the case.
So sometimes you have to what's the word? Spoon feed. Yeah, like a little bit of information because it's like I want to tell you but I don't know how you're going to react. And I'm also trying to manage my own emotions in terms of whatever's going on, right?
Yeah, and I think that's so relevant once you take us out of the family environment and put us into, you know, school and work spaces where you kind of learn what the landscape is and what is acceptable and unacceptable. And it is very tricky to navigate and it's so subtle. So I think it's so, so important to talk about that. So I think we should first talk about, you know, how we perceive and experience ourselves in white spaces.
Perceive and experience ourselves.
So let's start off with perceive. You know, let's say you're at a meeting,
right,
for a job that you have, or you're at work. Most of your colleagues are white.
Yes.
What do you notice about yourself in terms of how you interact and your own behaviors?
And white spaces. I feel like I'm much more bubbly than I am like in real life. I feel like I'm putting up a front, like, wow, this is so nice, and trying to adapt to whatever is going on. I feel like I'm much more calculated in what I say. Like I think a lot more about what I say when I show up in these spaces. Yeah, and I reflect more on not just what I say, but what people say, like how they receive whatever it is that I'm going to say or that I say. How do you think you show up in these spaces?
I think one of the trickiest things for me has always been this idea of small talk. Like I am not you're good at it.
You're not the one.
I don't really know how, unless you're my friend, I don't really want to know how your weekend was. Right. And sometimes it feels like such irrelevant information, but sometimes I feel like I'm forcing conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need to, right?
Or you'll come off as like cold, distant.
That's what I mean by being bubbly when I'm like, I'm not this way.
Like, how's your week? And I'm like, I don't want to talk to you about how my weekend went.
Yeah.
But it's like, you have to do that for people to almost like take you into the space.
Or feel like you're welcoming enough.
Yeah.
Right, right. And I do find it's a lot of upkeep. In terms of performance, it's almost like I try to gauge who I could actually be myself with. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I have been in spaces where there have been other minorities or people from different cultures. And I'm so drawn to those people because yeah. we have a similar, not always similar, but we have some overlap in terms of what it takes to be in these white spaces. Mm-hmm. But in terms of observing myself, sometimes it feels a little forced. The things I say and how I say them, because mm-hmm. I want to come off as, though I am friendly, sometimes I feel like I'm performing friendly.
Friendliness, yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's simply what you have to do, right? I feel like I caught myself one day saying, howdy or how do you do? And it was like, what is going on? I'm like, this is not me, but it's like, you have to match. You have to match what you're receiving, right? People are talking about the weather and how we had a snowstorm. And you're like, I guess that's what we're doing.
Your ass is like, howdy.
How do you do?
Sometimes it is what it is.
Oh, it is.
In terms of how I experience myself, you know, that's a really interesting question because I've been in Ottawa for so long, right. Over the last while, I've almost become accustomed to it. And I noticed that a few years ago, we went on a family trip back to Brooklyn, New York, and it's primarily Black people.
Mm-hmm.
And I never noticed how comfortable and at ease I felt being a part of the majority.
Right.
And how that doesn't translate when I'm in when I'm the minority in a lot of these spaces. I oftentimes go into grocery stores, or I mean, I live in the suburbs, grocery stores, mm-hmm. gyms, whatever. Well, pre-COVID. and I count the Black people.
I walk in, like, 10 fingers.
You can count them on 10 fingers. I literally show up in spaces sometimes and count the amount of Black people.
Mm.
And I don't know why I do that. It's almost like I'm looking for that comfort. I'm looking for that sense of belonging. See,
someone who looks like you, who has a similar story, maybe. Ooh,
it's hard to locate them, though. Where are you at?
Yeah, in Ottawa.
But in terms of how I experience myself, I don't necessarily feel uncomfortable, but sometimes it feels disingenuous.
Yes.
Like, sometimes I've caught myself literally having a conversation with someone and being smiley the whole time. And then as soon as they're gone, my face just like flips.
As soon as you close that Zoom meeting, it's
your face goes
180.
180. And I'm literally like, am I normal?
Right. Right.
Am I normal? That's so strange.
It's hard for me to keep that up though, because you know how I am. I'm not this like smiley, bubbly person like all the time. So, you know it. So when
don't
it's like
I know.
You have to do that for 30 minutes or an hour,
right,
and showing up in these spaces, it's like, I know I'm putting up a front, right? But it's like, it's what you have to do, right? You have to adapt to this environment.
And it's so tiring.
It is.
And I think another thing I do realize is that I've done so many interviews, job interviews in my life, in my young life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like I know what to say to sell myself.
Yeah.
And though I do think I'm qualified and things like that, it's just the way I say things and the way I express myself
mm-hmm.
is almost so much more sophisticated. And not that that's a bad thing, but I feel like I resist using any type of slang around people who aren't colored
right.
because I'm afraid they're going to see me as less educated.
Right.
And that's something
that's valid.
It's something that I remain so conscious of, like the different ways people could view you as unprofessional, loud, disorganized, too expressive. So it's almost like you dull everything down. Yeah. I water it down so that I'm not giving anyone any ideas that I'm performing blackness.
Right. But I feel like for me, even sometimes in a space where like maybe like a professional setting where there are other people of color or black people, it's like, how are they going to be? Are they going to be the ones that you could be like, hey, how, you know, like you can hang out with? Chop or are they showing up in these spaces as other like people that are not colored would be? So you're trying to gauge like what is the vibe here, right? So you show up first as like your super professional, sophisticated word, like you know, and then after that you kind of like you feel it out to see how is this going to be.
And it's like sophistication is so boring sometimes.
I know,
like we oftentimes as the black community, there's so much expression, whether it's our tone of voice or our facial features or the words we use, the synonyms,
using
noises to describe things that are happening.
There's so many noises. Just comes out.
So it's just like, I feel like I'm operating rigidly because I'm so afraid of being seen as less than or inferior. But I know it's not me. But I know what you mean, though, by showing up in a space and seeing other Black people. Because I recently had a school event and there were like 5 Black women. And then the rest of the people were white. And let's say there were about 8 of them. So at a certain point in time, we were interacting as a group and everybody was using the sophisticated language. And then we as the Black group divided.
Right.
Into our own group. So we had to talk to each other and you could see it come alive. Like we were using terms like chop it up, you know, I'll be your daughter's auntie. You know, she can call me anytime she wants to. So we were becoming more ourselves because we were interacting within ourselves. And I saw the shift and I felt it. I felt so at home communicating. And we were saying such sophisticated things, but the difference is we express ourselves so genuinely and authentically. We use those expressions, we use those noises, and then that didn't take away from our knowledge.
Exactly, from what you were saying.
Yeah, so...
But I feel like it's the fear, though. It's the fear that... I remember I had this interview, and it was like, I think I was using my hands. And then at the end, he was like, oh, you're very expressive. And my fear... was that like, okay, but what do you mean? You know, is that a good thing for you? Or is that something I shouldn't do? Like always having to switch between like how people see you and how you actually are, right? And having to navigate these spaces differently.
And it's so interesting because I remember going out with a group of my friends, Black. It was like 5 of us.
Are you talking about squad or a different group?
A different group.
Okay.
We went to the grocery store just a few years ago. And I remember like we were laughing. We were being ourselves. And then I thought to myself for a second, I'm like, oh, like hopefully these white people don't think we're rowdy. I mean, it was in the middle of the suburbs in Barrhaven, and we were the only group of Black people. And I was like, I hope I'm not making these white people uncomfortable.
Right.
Because they view expression and laughter and in such a different way, especially when it's a group of Black people.
Right. But it's like, it's literally... But that's where, like, I think about that sometimes where it's like, it's not a performance. Like, this is literally how it is at home. Right. You know, like, my mom is on the phone talking to someone in Haiti. Everyone can hear her
yelling.
You know, my brothers are watching a game. It doesn't matter. They're just expressive beings. So it's like, it's not a performance. Like, this is literally how we are.
Yeah.
Right.
And it gets kind of sad thinking about, you know, is being myself threatening
That's the thing.
To this other group of people?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, well, shit.
Right.
Woo. And I think that's something I've really worked on being a therapist. Yeah. If I'm going to preach authenticity and genuine, you know, behavior to clients, then I act like myself within session.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I do make little jokes here and there.
Right.
Sometimes I just do express myself and I don't try to use a sophisticated language all the time because I think that's what my clients like about me being me.
Mm-hmm.
Is just they see someone who's in their personality.
Right.
And isn't performing as a therapist. I'm a human that does therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I, by my identity, is like, I'm not, I don't identify as a therapist.
Right.
I'm just a person who does therapy, a person with a whole perspective on the world, openness to understanding other people, their own personality. So I think being a therapist itself has helped me let go of just that. These expectations, because people are coming to me for support and help.
Mm-hmm. But I think it takes time, though. You have to kind of like feel it out with a client, like where are they, right? Because sometimes it's like, I'm just trying to get a feel of where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And like in session, right? Depending.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to.
It is.
Like, I don't self-disclose. I try to keep myself as private as possible. But it, in terms of the engagement with the client, I think that is so important. Little elements like, for example, humor. It's yeah. so important.
It
for
makes a center. Huge difference.
It does make a huge difference. And the thing is, if a client isn't taking you in
mm-hmm.
or, you know, is not engaging with you, chances are, no matter who you are, that's going to be their experience. Maybe they take a little more time to trust people.
Right.
And I don't switch myself up for that. If I can right. work with you, I'll work with you. If you don't want to work with me, you don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to sit here and act so that you'll stay and be my client.
Yeah, we're not doing that.
We're not doing that. It's already yeah. exhausting
mm-hmm.
having to perform in these wide spaces that in my therapy room, which is like a sanctuary for me, which is where I spend most of my time.
In this office.
I don't want to fake. I don't want right. to fake.
You don't want to front. Yeah.
Not at all.
That makes sense. Right. It's just, I feel like sometimes clients aren't right. Like they take what you say and then they twist it because of whatever they're going through. And you kind of have to like explain like, no, that's not. So it's for certain clients, it's like I have to wait more to get into like humor and things like that with them. Like this, oh, like yeah. they're not ready to receive it in a proper way. So you kind of have to work through that. Like, why is it that you receive that way? Like
yeah.
it was just a simple, something you would brush off, but they take it and they hang on to it.
Yeah.
Whatever like their presenting concern is, right?
And the thing is, because you know, therapy is so, it's such a sensitive and so vulnerable
it really
relationship
is.
anything could be left for, you know, interpretation, and
right.
it's going to happen even if you're faking being somebody else.
They take something and they hold on to it.
So I think it's so important to have that, you know, like you said, processing it, having that open conversation.
Mm-hmm. But okay. No, I wanted to say, how is it that you think you show up in Black spaces? Because we spoke about white spaces.
Yeah. I think that in my mind, I wanted to convince myself that I was somehow more comfortable in Black spaces.
Hmm.
But I don't think that's true.
I don't think that's true for me either.
How do I perceive myself? Sometimes I'm like, I engage, I'm a little more timid.
Because
mm-hmm. it's like, my whole life, there, through social media, through, you see one version of Blackness.
Right.
Or you see a very, like, unidimensional, not multi-layered. So I grew up with this version of Blackness that was, like, ratchet. It was loud. It was mm-hmm. ratchet. It was expressive. It was too funny.
Right.
It was just bing, bang, boom. If you think about it, like all of the, you know, black sitcoms and mm-hmm. stuff like that had like very like big characters on mm-hmm. it. So that's what I saw. And I think, yeah, I grew up in Brooklyn. In Brooklyn. And there is a way that people navigate blackness in Brooklyn through slang, through music, through style, through expression. And I picked up on that, but I am also a very academic person. And that's to have philosophical conversations.
That's the thing.
But sometimes black people themselves don't, they almost reject that part of me.
That's the thing. I feel like for me, growing up, it was very much this thing where I was on the I was on the student body committee. I was in the environment committee. Mm-hmm. I was on like the student like journal committee. So, you know, I wasn't necessarily doing these things that the other black kids or black girls were doing. Mm-hmm. So then I remember at some point they called me, what is it, Oreo?
Mm.
Right? So black on the outside and white on the inside. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like I took that very personally because I'm like, but I'm still black though. But it was kind of like a rejection.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, and now in the space that we're in now, it's like you can be black and still be an academic, like you can still be like writing, like publishing papers. You can be black and you can still be a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
That's already like a big thing, right? The rejection of your very, like your profession.
Right, right.
And the stigma around that.
It's, I remember there was a time when my cousin, my little cousin, this was a long, long time ago. I think I was about, I want to say 11, 12. Let's say I'm 12. And my cousin, who's 3 years younger than me, so 9 years old, from Florida, her family comes and visits us for a summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember talking to her at some point, just having a conversation. And she stops dead in her tracks and looks at me. And she's like, "You're whiter than the white people."
She actually said that.
She said that. 9 years old. She was really young. But in her mind, blackness looks so different.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was coming from a place of, you know, speaking the way that I speak without any slang,
mm-hmm.
she saw it as not being black enough.
Right. Not being black enough.
And I remember thinking to myself, like, well, what the fuck does it matter if I can speak
properly
normally? Like, just because I'm not chopping it up and using all the slang all the time doesn't necessarily mean I'm not black. But for them, for her at that time, I think black was a skin tone, but it was also a performance. How do you speak? How do you engage? What do you say? When do you say it? But I wasn't that way. I grew up like a shy kid. I was quiet. I loved reading and writing and mm-hmm. stuff like that. But for them, it's just like, and I know I've heard stories of black kids getting jumped or attacked because they were too involved in their academics. And the other black kids saw that as to be ashamed of.
Right. Well, so there's nothing wrong with that.
It's an interesting experience. So in black spaces, oh my goodness, I don't remember the last time I've been in a black space.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm somewhere like Brooklyn, where it's predominantly black, I'm chilling. It feels good. It feels comfortable because it's mostly black and Hispanics.
Right.
When I'm somewhere like Canada and let's say there's like a black student meeting,
do you feel like you're here, but you're, how do you feel?
It's like, I feel comfortable because I see black people,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, I'm trying to gauge what blackness is for them.
Yeah. How is it over here?
Like, because there are so many different expressions of, like Ottawa is such a multicultural city
mm-hmm.
where black, like Brooklyn, New York, you're all from Brooklyn, New York. You're all blacks from Brooklyn, New York.
Right.
In Ottawa, it's like, are you from Ghana? Are you from Haiti? Are you from Jamaica? Are you from Nigeria? Because those are such different cultures.
Right.
And they may not, like, they may not notice the conflict here in having to code switch.
Right.
So it's just like, because there's so many different cultures and because different people have different relationships with being black, I'm constantly like assessing, like, are you like a slang black? Are you like me where we could chop it up? We can do all this stuff. We can say all these things.
Or are you showing up differently here?
Or are you showing up differently? Is slang not part of how you engage in the world? Like, what kind of music do you listen to? Is it like Afrobeat or is it rap? Like, those are two different worlds and realms. So it's because there's so many different types of expressions of black in this context, I find myself curious but hesitant to engage because I don't want to assume that just because they're black, they're similar to me.
My thing has been more almost like, you know, when like people expect you to be a certain way because it's a black space. Remember, was it last year we went to this event and it was really, really, the entire event was late. Do you remember? The entire event was late.
By 2 hours.
By 2 hours. And we're just sitting there like, are you serious right now? And everyone was kind of like, oh, this is normal. Right. And at that moment, I felt like othered because I'm like, everyone is okay with this right now. Like, we're 2 hours behind.
Right. And they oftentimes use the humor of like black time.
Black time. No, there's only one time. There's being on time. Right. But there's like this general, no, it's okay. You know, like.
Yeah. And it's really interesting though, because like in that moment, I remember feeling very frustrated.
Yes.
I'm like, oh my goodness. Like,
not that the event wasn't good and that the food was aight.
It was okay.
But it was more like, this is 2 hours. And remember, we were on time. Were we even late? Because we knew this was going to happen. I feel like we were 15 minutes late, but even hour late didn't compare how late the event was.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, especially in Ottawa, we're conditioned to on time is on time.
Yeah.
Early is better than on time.
Yes.
But I also do know that in other regions of Canada, like let's say the Maritimes, apparently I heard that time isn't a big deal. And you set a time and you could show up 30 minutes late and you're still early. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just us being black in this context of Ottawa specifically, that's very go, very like government type city where people are supposed to show up on time. And then we see this laissez-faire kind of like attitude with like, the black community.
What is going on here?
And it's like, maybe that's almost our desire. Maybe it's our unconscious desire for them to assimilate as well.
Right. Because I feel like part of our success has been us assimilating and being able to adapt to Ottawa and how you show up, right?
Like this kind of, if you can't beat them, join them.
Yeah, kind of, like 15 minutes early, have your things in order and together and pay your things on time and follow that.
And I think that goes back to maybe how we prioritize or we're maybe a little too, I don't want to pathologize our behavior, but maybe we're a little too obsessed with getting the approval from the people we feel stand in our way in terms of our opportunities. Like, I want to be successful, but I know that within this context, to be successful, you have to be respected. And the people that are literally standing at the gate are usually white.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to perform what they think is whiteness. I'm going to be proper, correct, on time, do everything correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So they will let me in so that I can do what I want to do.
Exactly.
But then I think I almost resent that a little bit too, because I don't enjoy the constant performance.
Mm-hmm. But it's almost like it's that, to me, it's like it's that, how, almost like, I guess, would it be experientially? Is that the word? You put on this shield to get into this, to get to the gate. You need to, you it's not that you want to, but you need to show up a certain way.
Right.
You need to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I think that's something that even at home was conditioned in me pretty strongly by my parents. Just like respect the people around you. Don't say nothing. Don't act up. Do as you're told. Because as a Black person, you're going to have to work five times harder than your white colleagues to even be recognized.
Mm-hmm. And especially as a Black woman, you have to do even more, right? There's this expectation. Mm-hmm. You know, and my parents told me, my mom told me the same thing. Mm-hmm. You need to work twice as hard, right? And she even said to get half of what they get.
Half.
So you're working four times as hard to get that full version.
So you always feel
so
like
you have to put on that shield.
Feel like you're fighting. And I remember I had applied to clinical psychology twice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at the University of Ottawa. So if any of you go there. So I remember my CV being like 5 pages longer.
No, it was 7 pages.
At
that time.
And it's just like, I have all this lab experience. I have all this community experience. I have all this
academic experience. Ooh. I have a publication on the way. You know, GPA is basically perfect. Mm-hmm. So how is it that I'm not able to get into this program? Yet I'm seeing other people.
Mediocre.
Not even half of what I have. Maybe like a 2-page CV who are getting in. What is going on here? Right?
I honestly didn't understand. And I'm sure there are other factors as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was just like the fighting for me.
Right.
That was just so tiring. Just the sense of, okay.
Like I did everything I was supposed to do.
More.
Even more.
I did work 5 times as hard. And it still didn't result in anything. And though I'm in a program now that recognizes, because I think it's the U Ottawa program is so small. The clinical psych program only lets in like 10 people. And they're usually mostly white. There are like 2 people who are Black and probably the entire program right now. Mm. So the school I'm going to now is much more diverse because it's based out of the States and it has so many more Black bodies. So I'm wondering, you know, in certain contexts, how resistant they may be to acknowledging the knowledge or the skills of Black candidates.
Right.
Like, I really wonder about that. You know, I've sat there and wondered before, like, when I'm interacting with a white person, whether that be a colleague, a boss, or whatever, I literally have the thought of, I wonder if you're racist. Like, I wonder if this is a performance for you and you actually don't like me because I'm Black. But because, you know, you can't tell me that because you would be viewed as racist, you're performing this niceness and making me feel like I belong, but deep inside.
Right. Almost this idea, like they'll take your application and say, oh, thank you.
Right.
And then they put it away
automatically
without even like almost looking at it.
Right. Right. So I'm proud of a lot of different aspects of being Black. It's something I just love the color and the expression and the noises. And I love all of that stuff. And I think it is my responsibility to find a Black community that I feel very grounded in, because I think that's actually a really big aspect of my personality. Like, if you can't ever be fully yourself with like colleagues, like you're gonna need somewhere to call home, to feel at home,
to feel at home with these people
as you truly are. So yeah, how it feels, it can be exhausting, but I wouldn't be anything else.
Right. You wouldn't choose to be anything else.
Right.
And I feel like that's what it comes down to. You know, despite everything, despite having to put up this, you know, this front, this armor and white spaces, showing up a certain way, having a white girl voice, all of that.
That's another topic.
And doing all of that, but it's like choosing to, I wouldn't want to be any other way, but right? Because it is who you are.
We are Negro through and through.
Through and through.
I think we spoke about so many different aspects of our experience, and I think I'm satisfied with the amount of information that I've shared.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we should, you know, give the audience a fun, reflective question.
Okay.
So what do you want them to think about as they finish this podcast?
A fun, reflective question.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is less fun, more serious.
Okay. Hit them with it.
You know how I be.
Hit them with it.
It would simply be, do you think you're showing up authentically in different spaces? What would yours be?
I think that's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to stick with that. So that's your, you heard your reflective question. So, yes. So go and journal or go and lay down for 10 minutes and think about it. So that concludes our podcast for today. And we hope that you take care of yourself.